through Ezra and Nehemiah. We started Nehemiah just a week ago. And so we're into chapter 2 of Nehemiah this morning. And I'll make this short. It's kind of an add-on to last week's message. Last week we highlighted three aspects of how God called Nehemiah to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the city wall. And if you haven't been a part of the series, and many of you haven't, by the way, you can find them on the website. You can find the messages on the website or our YouTube channel. But just a little bit of brief update is this was after the Babylonian exile for Israel. Israel had gone off the tracks for decades, for centuries, and God finally had enough, and he brought in foreign armies to conquer Israel, destroyed Jerusalem, and carried off the wealthy and important leaders to Babylon. And then another nation came along, Persia. They grew strong, defeated Babylon, and became the most powerful empire in the world. And those Persian kings began to send people back to their home countries and encourage them to restore their towns and their religious practices. And so that's the period of time that Ezra and Nehemiah come in, is they were people who were Jewish people who were sent back to Jerusalem and to Judah, the southern part of the kingdom, to rebuild, literally rebuild the city and rebuild their faith practices. Now, it was taking a long, long time. When we get to the first and second chapter of Nehemiah, we're more than 100 years into the rebuild, and the city was in terrible condition. The city was in ruins. The temple had been rebuilt, but the city walls were broken down. It was just ruins. It was not what God's city should have been. And we read in chapter 1 where Nehemiah, one of Nehemiah's brothers or kinsmen, came back from Jerusalem to Susa, where he was serving, where Nehemiah was serving the king. And Nehemiah inquired of his people, "Hey, what's going on back there in Jerusalem?" Nehemiah didn't grow up there. He grew up in Persia. But he still knew that that was the place of his ancestors, and he wanted to know what's going on there. And he got a bad report. The city's in ruins, the gates are burned, the walls torn down. It's not what God intends. And Nehemiah's concern began to grow and grow, and he began to pray. And God called him to do something about it. And last week we talked about three elements of the beginning of that call. God called Nehemiah, first of all, by planting a seed of concern in him. Concern enough that he inquired about his people and the city of God. And God had already put Nehemiah in the right place at the right time, so that once he decided to go and do what God was calling him to do, he had the resources and permission from one of the most powerful men in the world at the time to go back and rebuild the city. And we see that Nehemiah bathed all this in prayer. For about 4 months, before he ever sought permission from the king of Persia to go back, he had prayed and fasted and planned. And that's kind of what we lead up to today in Nehemiah chapter 2. And we'll see how that call process continued and began to bear fruit. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1. "In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, 'Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart.' I was very much afraid. But I said to the king, 'May the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?' The king said to me, 'What is it you want?' Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king, 'If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it.' Then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, "How long will your journey take, and when will you get back?" It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, "If it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the royal park, so that he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city wall and for the residence I will occupy. And because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my request." I just want to remind you again how much prayer had gone before this conversation with Artaxerxes. In chapter 1, verse 1, we see that this process began in the beginning of the month of Kislev. That, on our calendar, would be mid to late November. That's when Nehemiah heard the report regarding the bad condition of Jerusalem, and he began to pray. And this conversation with the king happened in the month of Nisan, the first year on the Jewish calendar, but on our calendar, that would be mid-March. So from November to springtime, mid-March, Nehemiah had been praying, fasting, and planning for about 4 months before this conversation happened. In that prayer in chapter 1, in the last verse of that prayer, Nehemiah asked God to give him success in the presence of the king. And that's what we just read. As he began to talk to the king about going to Judah, Nehemiah admits his fear. He was afraid in the presence of the king. This man had the power to do whatever he wanted. Now, Nehemiah had been his servant for a long time. He was well respected. He was trusted. He was known by the king. But if he made the wrong move here, it could have been off with his head. That's just how simple things were in those days. He said he was afraid. But then, he had already asked God to give him success. But when the king asked him, "What is it you want?" he said, "I prayed to the God of heaven." And I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors buried lies in ruins and the gates have been destroyed?" And the king said, "What did you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven. I think of that as an arrow prayer. Like in the heat of the moment, fired off a little prayer, right? Have you ever done that? You're faced with something going on and it's just something like, "Lord, help me. Help me." I find myself in this position often, especially as I begin to counsel people, whether that's planned or not, and I realize there's something deep going on here and it's way above my head. And I pray, "Lord, help me. Help me hear what I need to hear. Help me say only what needs to be said." And I'm sure you found yourself in some urgent matter like Nehemiah did in the moment, just saying, "Lord, help." Listen to me, that's absolutely the right thing to do. Those kind of little quick prayers shot off to heaven, to the God of heaven, he said, that's the right thing to do. Just don't let it be the only way you pray. Remember, that little prayer was backed up by 4 months of praying and fasting and planning. And we can see in this little short report that King Artaxerxes knew Nehemiah well. He noticed that Nehemiah's countenance was not normal. The king had never seen him look sad before, so he inquired, "What's wrong?" And Nehemiah's answer may seem a little rude to you. He answered a question with a question. Now, sometimes in our day, that's kind of smart aleck, right? But in the Eastern ways, that's normal. That's just the way that they communicate. The king even knew that Nehemiah needed to ask for something, right? He could see what was going on in Nehemiah's mind. He said, okay, what do you want? Do you have that experience with your children? You know what they're leading up to? Oh, just spit it out. What do you want? Right? The king asked him, what is it you want? It seems like the king was immediately willing to send Nehemiah back to Jerusalem. So he asked for a time frame. How long is it going to take you to go? When will you be back? And Nehemiah could see that things are going well, so he asked for a letter to the officials along the route and in the region of Judah. When you have a letter from the most powerful man in the world that says you can go this way, that means a lot. So he said, will you give me a letter for safe passage? And we find out later that he not only gave him a letter, he gave him a cavalry and soldiers to go with him. And that went so well that Nehemiah said, and may I have a letter to the keeper of the royal forest so that I can have timber to rebuild what needs to be rebuilt in Jerusalem. And the king granted all of that. And then we will continue through chapter 2 and into chapter 3, we find that Nehemiah had everything he needed, not only for the journey, but everything he needed to start rebuilding the wall. When God calls us to a task, He supplies. And His supplies are endless. God doesn't run out of resources. Here He uses a pagan king to sponsor His own work. Now, a little bit of historical information that I think adds to the intrigue of the story. The Persian Empire was vast. I've told you this before. From about the edge of Turkey to Greece and all the way south, even into part of Africa, he was in power over Egypt at the time. But there was a little bit of an uprising in Egypt, a little bit of rebellion going on in Egypt. Well, it turns out that the king needed a strong outpost between his main part of the kingdom and down in Egypt. Well, guess what land lies strategically between them? It's Israel. And so Jerusalem was an important city. The king needed a strong outpost. He said, yes, go back and rebuild those walls. You see, he needed the favor of the people in Jerusalem, and he needed a strong outpost to make sure that he could take care of that rebellion in Egypt and he could prevent Egypt from coming up through Israel and attacking more of Persia. Now, does that take away from anything that God was doing? Absolutely not. God uses our circumstances. God is at work in our circumstances. He moves kings and kingdoms for His purposes. God originally gave that piece of land, that strategic land, to the descendants of Abraham so that they could be His representatives to the nations in the international crossroads of trade. We know that God knew what was coming, not just for this event, but for all. That's the whole point of putting Israel right there in that land, to put His people there. Trade routes north and south, east and west intersect in that land. It's still a pretty strategic piece of land, isn't it? I mean, where's the fighting going on? People have been fighting on over that land for millennia. And God planted His people right in the center of it to influence the nations. And for Nehemiah, he was at the right, in the right time, at the right place to gain what he needed to go back and help restore Jerusalem. When God calls us to something, we start with that concern a desire. And if we pray and we present that to God, often that builds into more desire and it begins to build into a plan, and things start to come, the vision develops like it did for Nehemiah. And God knew his character. God needed a guy that was a detailed planner and could lead people. And Nehemiah was in the right place and the right time to get the resources from the king of Persia. We heard from Payton last week about the collecting supplies for school kids. And she talked about how the Lord had just laid it on her heart and how that developed into an opportunity. And you can go to our website and you can find it in the, right at the bottom of the home page, you can find a little event talking about those school supplies. You click on that and then go to the part where it says, here's the list. It'll take you to Amazon to help you buy things that to help kids have the right supplies they need at school. Now, that may not be a lifelong calling for Peyton, but God put it on her heart, gave her a plan, and look what it's developed into. I checked it this morning. About 75% of the things are already purchased. So if you want to get in on that, you better do it today. And then it ranges to lifelong calling, right? Where God changes people. Sometimes it's when we're young and God calls us to his service. Sometimes it might happen when we're young, but we neglect it until we get old and God brings us back to it. But even still, he provides opportunity and he provides resources. What I want to do is just ask you to pay attention. Just pay attention to what God's doing, what he's stirring in you and what he leads you to and what might develop from that. Now, it doesn't always go without a hitch. In fact, as we read on in Nehemiah, we find really quickly he runs into opposition, powerful opposition. And we'll work on that as we go. What I'm saying is, when God calls us to a task, it may not be automatic and simple. It may not all be glorious, but he will provide. He will provide. I was reading in Lamentations this morning also, and I think we mentioned it last week, where that great part in Lamentations 3 where it says God's faithfulness is fresh every morning, his mercies never fail. But if you go back to the beginning of Lamentations, it's two chapters of woe is me. This is hard. God has brought us through hard times. It's tough. Because Jeremiah was a prophet during that whole destruction of Israel and exile process. It was a bad time. And then he says, but because of what I know of God, I have hope. His mercies are new every morning. His mercies never fail. His faithfulness is complete. You may feel that way, like you're going through it. Bad health, family problems, business problems. And you may need to be reminded, God is faithful. He is always faithful. His faithfulness endures forever. Pay attention to what he's doing in your life. Whether it be a great time or a hard time, he loves you. He does have a plan for you. You will not be good enough to earn his favor. So strike that plan. If you think, I've just got to get better. I've got to get better. I've got to do more. That's not how you get to heaven. That's not how you come into relationship with the Lord. It is only by His action that we are saved. Because He died on the cross, He's already done the work. And because He reaches out to us with forgiveness, that we can go to Him and we can receive His mercy. And then we want to live right. One of the songs we said about our love should grow for Him. We try to act right because it's how we honor the Lord who has done so much for us. It's not a way to earn our way to heaven or to nirvana or any other place. I'm rambling. It all connects in my mind. I hope it does in yours. God has a plan for each of us. He has lots of plans for our church. We're talking about kids going to preteen camp. We had youth camp this past week. They just arrived back home late yesterday. We're going to hear from them. We've got a group leaving the Czech Republic right now to come home, and they're going to bring three students with them to be with us for 6 weeks and to be discipled in Texas. Lots going on. Listen, pay attention to what God's calling you to do. Let's pray.